Would you just shut up?
Amanda?
That goes for you, too.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 22, Screams from a Marriage. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave. Hello, listeners. Guess what? Again with this, episode 110. Can you believe we've done that many episodes? I almost can't. That one's dropping September 2nd. Let's watch Amy Locane, that's Sandy from season one, in NBC special treat, : out of time.
Special, wait, all right. You can,
it's called special treat out of time, or you're saying it's NBC's special treat to you out of time?
That's part of the title.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of the school break special on CBS or after school special on ABC. NBC called their special treat, and well, whatever.
It's made a show just for you. Special treat.
Yeah, the naming is not so great, and also the show is not so great, but we will talk about all of that on episode 110.
I know you guys don't like raisins in your cookies, but if you call something a special treat, you know you're going to have raisins in it.
Oh, there's raisins. There's raisins.
Or carob chips. And we went to the co-op. Oh, fuck. Anyway, here's the point. This special treat is on YouTube. We will link it in the show notes, and you can join us for that and all 109 other episodes. We talk about some wild shit. And that's at patreon.com/againwiththis. Please come along for the ride. It will be very fun.
Underrated grandma ingredient that no one really likes? Dates. Just saying.
Dates just big raisins?
Yes.
I mean, you guys are all poo-poo raisins, and then you're like, well, how about the mega raisin? Give me a fucking break. Mm. You go back and you try raisins again, Tara.
No.
I'm not eating dates either.
I also don't want dates. I meant underrated in the sense of, like, it doesn't get the same play that carob and raisins get, but it should.
Yes, I agree. And carob is really more of like a your hippie mom freeze nature's candy issue.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
getting off topic.
Enough avoiding this episode.
Seriously,
all right. Talking about shriveled fruit.
Speaking of shriveled fruit, let's start with our B plot. Kimberly escalates her plan to break up Megan and Michael, and Matt's niece is a troubled teen. We were speaking in the last episode about how, considering that Megan is paranoid about being perceived as a former sex worker, like they overcompensate by dressing her like real undersexy. And that's where we are here. She's in like a mock turtleneck and pants on the way to good old room 1313.
Yeah, that's no.
This,
I mean, at least a clear kitten heel, something.
A skirt. Like, I'm not, not even a short one necessarily. But anyway, she gets a housekeeper to let her into room 1313. And this poor lady, Irene Olga Lopez, also had a recurring role on Frasier as a Frasier love interest. Ha ha. Oh, no, of course not. As Maris's maid. Anyway, Megan starts searching the room for the sex tape, and when Josh the pimp appears to mock her, she screeches at him to hand the tape over. Lady, that is not how this works, and you know it. And as she brandishes a liquor bottle at him, which you can see in the visual aids, Josh the pimp explains that Kimberly is the one who wants to ruin Michael and Megan's marriage, and how he knows Kimberly. And he suggests to Megan that he and Megan join forces, because if they can make Kimberly believe Megan's working for Josh the pimp again, Kimberly will hold up her end of the bargain and keep him out of prison. We'll also tell Michael what Megan's doing. And when Megan and Josh the pimp prove that it's not true, Kimberly will lose all credibility with Michael.
So Byzantine.
It's so convoluted. Like, this also disregards the fact that, like, Megan also has a reason to want Josh the pimp back in prison, like,
yeah,
you know, I'm just saying. But they go on. Clip two.
You expect me to believe that you're just gonna come to my rescue when this whole thing's just unraveling, Josh?
You
family. I'm the one you can always come back to. I know you since you were 15. I hid you from the cops. I give you my last bite of food. I even saved your life once. I love you, girl.
I mean, the only thing that could make the acting worse in this scene is to add Billy, which I'm glad they didn't do, but yikes.
Yeah. So Megan lets Josh the pimp kiss her a couple of times and then says after this scheme, they are done. And I just want to note, she did not even make Josh the pimp turning over the sex tape a condition of her going along with this. Like, get your shit together, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, come on.
At the hospital, Matt is paged to meet his tear-streaked mother. It's about Matt's brother Luke, whose existence is brand new information in the Year of Our Lord season 5. But it doesn't matter. We're never going to meet Luke because he just died in a plane crash. And I kind of like that they have Matt say this sort of idiotic thing that people say when a death is a surprise. In this case, it's, are you sure? I just spoke to him last month, as though his next sentence were going to be, and we discussed how he never intended to go anywhere in a small plane. But he doesn't. And Matt asks after Chelsea. She was not on board, but this makes her practically an orphan since no one has heard from her mother in years. So got it. Chelsea is Luke's daughter. Matt promises his mother he will handle everything. Mrs. Fielding says that Craig is flying in the next day for the Chelsea. Sorry. Matt promises his mother he will handle everything. Mrs. Fielding says that Chelsea's flying in the next day for the funeral in the city where Luke did not live. Okay.
Mm.
That night, Megan goes to the deck at the beach house to confront Kimberly about Josh the pimp. Kimberly denies any involvement in anything, but in a faintly bitchy way that lets us know she's not trying that hard to sell her story. Clip 3.
Look, you have no idea what you have done.
I'm sure none of this is as serious as you're making up.
Let me tell you about Josh, okay? He rescued me from my childhood when I was 15. My savior, my hero, my first lover. And then he turned me into a whore. It was degrading and scary. But he convinced me it was the only thing that I would ever be good at, that he was the only man that could ever love me. And I believed it.
If he's such a problem for you, maybe you should leave town. I could give you some money.
You know, Kimberly, you are always trying to get rid of me. I want you to stop that. You used to be my friend.
I still am. Let's not let this Josh, whoever he is, come between us.
And stop lying about him, at least. He told me that you're trying to pull me down so that you can have Michael. Kimberly, you don't understand. Michael is my life raft. He gave me back my dignity. And now you're trying to take it away again?
I would never hurt you, Megan. You have to believe me.
Then how could you turn Josh Lush on me?
This motherfucker said Josh Lush.
She did.
BRB, changing the name of the group chat to Josh Lush. Stupid. I know that was a very long scene, and they were probably like, you don't have time to take it again, but still, Josh Lush. That's rough.
Yeah.
All the rest
also,
of it is.
Michael gave you back your dignity.
I know. Ooh.
That's just, you should leave town. Just start all over.
Yeah. Anyway, she doesn't. Megan tells Kimberly that Josh the pimp won't go away until he has had his fill. And Kimberly serenely says she's sure everything will be just fine. And the next day, Kimberly goes to room 1313 to yell at her co-conspirator. Clip 4.
You told Megan about me. You weren't supposed to. Why'd you tell her, Josh?
I truly only clip that because it sounds like even Marcia Cross thinks that Josh is a dumb name for this pimp character.
I'm sure I said this a couple episodes ago, but I just keep thinking of Tom Hanks filling out that application in Big and being like, Josh. This is a bad name for a pimp.
Why'd you do it, Josh? He claims that Megan guessed Kimberly was behind everything, but Kimberly's pulling the plug anyway. Josh the Pimp says it's too late because things are already in process. A friend of Josh the Pimp's is meeting Megan at the bar downstairs the next night. He's going to bring her up to room 1313, and Josh the Pimp will arrange for Michael to see them together, and neither Megan nor Michael will get hurt. Kimberly also makes Josh the Pimp swear to get out of their lives when this is over, which he does agree to, since he is on parole and Kimberly controls his release in this sketchy plan that keeps getting referred to but not explained. And then Megan brings Michael lunch at the practice and, with basically no preamble, asks how bad it would be if his patients or other doctors found out about her old job. Reputation is everything in his business, Michael says, but even so, what's past is past. Everyone gets to reinvent themselves in America. So she suggests they go on a honeymoon, but Michael has too many patients. He suggests a fancy dinner the next night instead, but she's kind of committed at Matt's mom's house. We already know this is a lie, but it's not even a credible one because she is not friends with Matt, despite her trying to force that on him a couple of episodes ago with that hug and shooters where he was like, oh no, help.
Girl cooties, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Matt, when we next see him, he is picking up Chelsea from airport jail because she got drunk on the plane. Matt tries to leave with her, but one of the airport cops says that since Chelsea's a minor, he can only release her to a parent, and Chelsea gallows humors that he's going to have a hard time finding one. And I have to think that can't possibly be the rule in a situation where a minor is traveling alone. Like, a parent might not even be in the city they're in. Like, airport cops, if you're listening, reach out and let us know what would happen in this situation for real.
Yeah, I mean, I think what would happen in the situation is the flight attendants would not serve this person without ID. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, she looks older than 21 because she probably is, even though she's a teenager in character. The actress...
her ticket would be flagged. Absolutely. A minor traveling by herself.
You're right. So Matt is embarrassed by Chelsea's attitude, but confirms her story that she is parentless. And when the guy hears about her dead dad and estranged mother, he decides to let Matt take her after all. And then it's the wake at the Fielding house. Michael enters looking for Megan, but she called Matt earlier to say she would not be coming. And Matt makes a this bitch face as he leaves that you can see in the visual aids. And then Matt finds Chelsea in the laundry room or pantry or something on the phone trying to track down her mother in France. And her bravado reminds him of Luke, the tough guy in the family, Matt says. And Chelsea says she used to fight with Luke a lot, too. It was the last thing they did before he died. And Matt says Luke didn't die because he was mad at Chelsea, nor is that why her mother left. And Chelsea says Matt doesn't know anything about her mother and then starts crying as she asks why her mother's not there. Babe, they did not even book Stephanie Beecham for Jack McKay's funeral. You think they're going to find some lady we don't even know to come to this? Give me a break. You're lucky they found you.
Maybe Katya can come back from Moscow. And,
oh, yeah.
remember her? Aren't they still married? They might be.
I guess it doesn't matter for Matt.
No, it doesn't.
In 1990, whatever this is, 6, 5, 4, 6. Speaking of some broad, let's head over to the hotel bar where Josh the Pimp finds Megan. He points out her fake client, Tony, over at the bar. And when she goes to see him, Josh the Pimp heads back to Kimberly, who snits that Michael's not there, so they need to call this all off. But Josh the Pimp tells her to stay the course as they both watch Megan, with zero finesse, take a bill out of Tony's hand. Like, even if you're not a pimp, take money from someone in a public place a little more subtly than this. Like,
yeah. There was almost like a yoink sound effect. Yes. It was really dumb.
Yeah. But Kimberly takes off, which is when we see that Tony is Andy Buckley, later corporate boss David Wallace from The Office. Kimberly has absolutely no chill as she bellows through the bar to Megan not to do this. Too late, because Tony is a cop and Megan is under arrest. Clip 5.
Josh, what are you doing? Why?
It's my nature.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean, yeah.
So when this little squad is gone, Kimberly turns on Josh the Pimp, who absolutely does not care that he let her down, because why would he? And the next day, Michael finds Megan in jail and does not believe she was set up by Josh the Pimp and Kimberly, or that she was playing along to protect Michael. He has arranged for her bail, but he's not staying. And when she yells that she's not like them, he says either we'll talk or I'll talk. Unclear. Another person who needs to enunciate or didn't have time for another take. Josh Luge. Over to the Fielding house where Luke's will is being read. He put all his assets in a trust for Chelsea. to be administered by her legal guardian, Matt. This comes as a shock to literally everyone. This is something that only happens to create conflict in fiction stories, but which no real-life responsible parent would ever do, assign their kid to be in the care of someone after their death without telling that someone that they had done so. Like,
yeah.
Would never happen.
Does not happen.
Mrs. Fielding wants to take custody of Chelsea, but the lawyer says the will is legally binding, as if he is going to come back and check. Like, let Matt be nominally in charge of the trust, if that's what Luke wanted, but no one is going to care if you make your own custodial arrangements off the books, I have to think. But, of course, this is TV. No one's going to be sensible when Luke already wasn't. That said, they should not be having this conversation in front of Chelsea at this moment, making her feel unwanted. That said, she's making herself unwanted by being a little bitch all the time so far. At the hospital, Kimberly finds Michael to say she heard about Megan and feels responsible for what has happened because she was the one who initially hired Megan, leaving out all the other stuff she did with Josh the Pimp.
Well, not that there's any follow-up about this, but how would she have heard?
Exactly.
Like, if Michael followed up on that.
Right.
She has a police scanner now?
Seriously.
Jesus.
Since we saw Michael last, he seems to have started to believe what Megan told him about Kimberly, but she insists that she loves Michael and would never intentionally hurt Megan like this. But Michael doesn't trust either of them anymore, and I want to know why he ever did, because they're both huge liars, and that is very much proven. And much later, Megan and her little slip dress with the medallions on it that we talked about in the last episode is turfed out into the dark, rainy night. Josh the Pimp pulls right up alongside her and starts needling her about how little Michael cares about her. Clip 6.
I'm the only one who loves a real you.
You have no clue who I am.
Well, you walk in the street. Is that a clue? I'll tell you what, though. You're the best. You understand just what a man wants and how to give it. You got nothing else going for you. But that's your gift. Nobody knows that better than me.
Listen to me. I don't have to listen to this anymore.
Yeah, whenever one kicks you out of bed, I'll be right here for you, baby.
This is where you live!
All right, calm down.
Jesus. I mean, it is sort of sad that, like, the writers have made Josh the Pimp correct by giving her basically no traits.
Yeah.
Except being, except her job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And wearing little barrettes. Like, that's it.
And playing the piano sometimes.
Oh, right.
End of list.
LOL.
Yeah. Well, I'm scared about where this may be going that's even more terrible, but that's where we leave them for now. In our A plot, patriarchy comes down hard on Taylor and Amanda.
As it were.
All patriarchy loves to do. Unfortunately, we pick back up with Amanda and Craig post-coitally, the former looking extremely remorseful, as you can see in the visual aids.
Oh, she looks like she's a stiff breeze away from Ralphing all over
truly.
His ugly sheets.
But Craig is overjoyed and babbles about the champagne he's been saving for this moment. When he comes back to the bedroom with it, she is already getting dressed. As far as she is concerned, this never happened and will never happen again, and he better not fucking tell anyone that it did, or she will kill him. He says he'll be discreet, but then immediately shows he can't as he follows her out of the apartment, yammering about how great things could be with them and blah, blah, blah. And when she passes Billy and Sam, who are lit up with the joy of witnessing this scandalous event, and is one of the true times I've enjoyed seeing them, she orders them to keep their stupid mouths shut about it, too.
Samantha also has a cute sweater on. This the blocking of the scene was so weird, though, because she, like, went downstairs. Like, if Amanda is going back to her apartment.
Well, she went to his place. He is next door, but she has her own separate stairs to hers. Like, there's a flight of stairs that only goes up hers. But I think they forgot which side he's on.
Yeah, I think they did, too. Okay. Thank you for clearing that up.
Anyway. When Amanda lets herself back into her apartment, she hugs herself sadly before smashing a framed photo of Peter against the mantle. That's the energy you needed in the last episode, not sad and horny, just saying. The next morning, Taylor shows up at Peter's to complain about Amanda punching her the night before. LOL, it's still funny. Her bruise is so fake. It is almost the same color as her lipstick. Mm-hmm. So it just looks like she like smeared it with the back of her hand or something.
Yeah. Looks like cream blush.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thumbs down, makeup department.
See that in the visual aids. Taylor has deduced that Amanda knows about her and Peter, and he confirms that he saw Amanda see them the previous morning. And Taylor is, I hate to say, justified in being horrified that Peter didn't tell Taylor about that.
Yeah.
Because Amanda might tell Kyle, and then Taylor wouldn't be able to see Peter again, and he's kind of like, duh, clip seven.
Wait. This was never about you and me, was it? This was about you and Amanda. Why should I even come here anymore?
I don't know. You've been after me since day one, like some desperate schoolgirl who thinks I'm just gonna whisper off her feet to some magical kingdom. Well, get a grip. I'm married by a thread, and so are you. So if you think it's time to end this, well then fine. Maybe you ought to go. Maybe we can at least salvage the rest of our lives.
I don't know why I keep coming here. But I can't stop thinking about you. And it makes me sick what I'm doing to Kyle. I can't help it. Just don't hate me.
And don't worry. That's an emotion I generally reserve for myself.
You got a little left over for her. Come on now.
Yeah. I mean, he almost sells it, though. But she's like, why do I keep coming here? Like, we don't know. Stop. Stop.
You're horny. That's the reason. It's not complicated. He's attractive.
He's hot. You've had a crush on him since you were like 13. Like, I don't know what the fuck he's doing.
Yes.
But we get what you're doing.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Cut to the kitchenette. Kyle's. Where Mario, who is all over this show suddenly, reports that Nick called for his last paycheck and left his forwarding address at the Constitution Hotel. Again, Kyle does not have the authority to kick Nick out of his legally rented apartment, and this is very silly. Mario goes on to tell Kyle about Taylor getting punched in the face by that blonde that used to do our ads, and Kyle is obviously disturbed by the implication but says Taylor didn't tell him that. She doesn't like to talk about it when she loses. So he's going to go look for her at the new gym up the street. She works out there every morning now. And Mario's like, sure, dude. And Kyle seems to realize that might not be where she's been going. Over to D&D, Billy and his much improved haircut, which you can see in the visual aids, do a wellness check on Amanda since she seems to be going through something with Craig, which she denies. Billy, alternating between the wrong face, a smirk, and the right one, disgust, calls Craig a reptile that Amanda should look out for. But Amanda says that she took advantage of Craig, and now Craig thinks he's in love. Billy jokes that Craig will survive, just like Billy did. And Amanda chuckles that when she used Billy, she knew he would bounce back, and muses that she's not a great person sometimes, and Billy accepts that quasi-apology. I didn't mind this scene, I have to say. I like it when the two of them are friendly.
I thought it was fine. Yeah.
Was a strange experience to be like, oh, that wasn't bad, when
like,
Billy is involved.
Oh, Billy has been used correctly.
Exactly. After close at Kyle's. That night, Kyle asks Taylor how the gym was. It sucked. It's the gym. But, of course, she was not actually there, so she lies that it was fine. And he reveals that he went, and she wasn't there. She suggests it was probably after she left. But Kyle asked the manager, who said Taylor's not a member, and no, he didn't go to the wrong gym either. This is such a rookie mistake on Taylor's part, and I'm not here to tell anyone how to have an affair. But why would you say you were going to a gym on your block where you work? Like, say you joined a gym in the marina because you got some crazy deal or something to A, give cover when you're on your way out to that side of town to fuck Peter, and B, make Kyle think twice about checking up on you because it's far enough to be a pain in the ass to go. I know the traffic does not exist on this show, but in real life, that's a real factor that he could be like, oh, I could go and try and track down Taylor, but it's going to be 2 hours there and back.
Yeah. Well, or just say you're going running.
Right.
And then when he's like, I went to look for you, but you must have run really far. And it's like, well, I drove to a park. Like, that. Right. I mean, mm-hmm. maybe you have to have had a really strict mother, but like right. sometimes the lying on soap operas, even for a soap opera, yes. you're like, guys.
Yeah.
Like, nobody is still grounded for times they snuck out when they were 16. Come on.
yeah. Think or you're in Los Angeles. Say you went for a hike. I was in the canyon.
Yeah.
I went to a different canyon. You couldn't find me because it's big. It's a canyon. anyway, this is also when we learned
that Taylor... I was stepping over all the people who went for hikes with their estranged spouses. oh, Dateline.
Mm. This is also when we learned that Taylor had claimed to Kyle that she got the bruise at the gym, even though the punch happened at her workplace in front of several people who obviously know both her and Kyle and Amanda. When Kyle reveals that he knows what really happened, Taylor chalks the punch up to paranoid fantasy on Amanda's part. She really did hurt herself at the gym, and it's just a wild coincidence that Amanda happened to punch her in the same spot on her face. Lady, stop backpedaling. You are not going to win this one. He has got you dead to rights. Come up with another way out, because the yeah. lying is not it. And as she tries the wrong gym location gambit again, Kyle loses patience and goes to the kitchen to throw dishes and waste produce, which you can see in the visual aids, because it upset me. It's not the vegetables' fault.
Yeah. Also, now he has to climb up there with the hanging pot rack and clean all those pots again.
That's right.
Because they've been sullied by Broccoli Rob. How dare you? Right.
The next day, Craig is improbably running a strategy meeting about a campaign for a jasmine perfume I regret to say is called Jasmine, as you can see in the visual aids. J-A-Z-M-E-E-N. Mm. I am not buying that product.
No, sorry. Me neither.
When Amanda suggests that Allison should do the pitch, Craig claims he feels very strongly about the product because he's a romantic. And Amanda pushes back again, and Craig calls her too cynical. She needs to let herself open up to her true feelings more, but her true feelings are cynical, she says. And things are so bad that even Billy tries to get things back on track to no avail. Clip 8.
Well, maybe we should just focus on the presentation itself. See, Allison could start with the slogan. Something.
Forget the slogan. What we need to say is that when two people care about each other...
Perfume is not about caring. It's about sexual manipulation.
It's about being overpowered by your desires, Amanda. Why don't you just admit that?
You know, why don't you just handle the meeting yourself?
Amanda.
Take it easy there, Ace. You know, she wants to be left alone.
What are you, a personal secretary?
Back off.
This was actually good?
Yeah. Again, I appreciate that Andrew Hsu was like, got the direction, say back off, make it sound like you're saying fuck off. And he did. He pulled it off.
And also that exchange where like, okay, it's a little heavy handed. They're talking about perfume. It's about sexual manipulation. Gee, yeah. What are the parallels? Right. I don't get it. But for this show and for Charvet to actually be like I sensed at least half an emotion. Mm-hmm. He enunciated. He was jumping Amanda's lines. Up is down.
Yeah.
I was interested. I chuckled at Billy. This is very disconcerting.
We're through the looking glass here. It's true.
We are.
So Kyle brings Nick's last check to his seedy motel room. I am proud of him for renting it, not sleeping in his car, since he no longer has any friends whose couches he can try to crash on. Nick tries to get rid of Kyle, who shoves his way in and demands to know more about the photos because Taylor is definitely lying to him. Nick doesn't think that Kyle is ready for the truth, but Kyle insists, so Nick plays him the recording of her filthy phone call, and the choices Rob Estes makes with his reaction holding this tape recorder are really something. There is a GIF and a still shot from this scene where it's just like,
oh my God,
so over-emoting.
I forget what I captioned mine was something like Mongo, Mere Pawn, and Game of Radio Shack. Like, yes. He is seriously staring at it. It is like the opening sequence of 2001.
It is.
And then you expect the obelisk to float in, but the obelisk is Charvet, because no emotion.
Kyle then smashes up the tape recorder and punches Nick for not telling him what he knew sooner, and also for enjoying it too much, which fair.
And also... Also, he's like stomping on the tape recorder, but it fell behind the like TV or like the chiffon robe in the corner. So he's like with his foot behind it, like trying, like it's a spider or something. Yeah. And Nick is just watching him, and it goes on for like 30 seconds. This whole scene is extremely weird.
It's very funny.
This is more familiar. Like yes, inexplicably yes. C-. That's the Melrose season 5 we know. Thank you.
That's right. The next morning, Taylor finds Kyle at Kyle's, drinking alone. He says he talked to Nick, whom Taylor dismisses as having swallowed too much nerve gas in the Gulf War. Kyle cautions her not to be shitty. And in the scene, Lisa Rinna's bangs are so long that when she blinks, her eyelashes flick them, which you can see in the visual aids because I made a GIF. Like, it's very noticeable.
Yeah.
Kyle reports about the tape he heard and snits that Taylor and Peter must have had a great laugh at Kyle's expense. And Taylor tries to answer, starting with baby, but he grabs her arm, drink, and says if she ever calls him baby again, he will rip her tongue out. I mean, I also hate her, but yikes. Yikes.
Well, and here again, we're back in familiar territory, which is, which Kyle is it in this scene?
Right. So then Taylor goes straight to the hospital to interrupt Peter on rounds and catch him up. She is afraid Kyle's going to hurt someone and she doesn't know what to do. And Peter stops just short of slapping some sense back into her, but may regret that choice that not to do that when she throws her arms around him and makes him promise to be there for her, which, you know, at this point, she definitely knows his word is worthless, but whatever, I guess you take what you get. And when she gets into her car outside, Nick hops into the passenger seat and demands $5,000. Bro, for what? You have already spilled all her secrets. You have nothing left to sell. Like, seriously, the end of this is bring me the money by 6 and that's it, because there is no or else. And when she says he's crazy, he grabs her arm, drink. As he says he overreacts when he gets angry, it's the Marine in him, and then finally gets the or else, which is he will kill Peter. Okay, fine. But took too long to get there, honestly.
Yeah.
So Taylor goes home and reports all of that to Kyle, but only because she went to the bank to get the money and found out Kyle had already emptied their joint account. And
finally, someone acting like a rational, vengeful person. Come on.
She does not seem to notice that he is packing her shit while this is going on. So he has to point that out. He figured she would want to leave immediately. And what does she want to do with the wedding crystal? She repeats that Nick has threatened Peter's life. She doesn't care what he does with the crystal. So he jerks up the shelf that it's on and smashes it all at once. Okay, look, first of all, this is not a great advertisement for how the military trains its troops to manage their emotions when they are not on active duty. Second, I still can't stand Taylor, but it is starting to gross me out how this episode is showing the people in her immediate circle as two extremely violent psychos, plus a mere sociopath, Peter, who has rejected her at this point about 25 times. Nevertheless, Taylor tells Kyle she's begging him, and he says he will remember her that way. Ooh.
I mean, again, which Kyle is this?
Mm-hmm.
And why, I mean, yes, Taylor is a creep, and yes, they should break up, but I don't think it needs to turn into this, like, I'm a scary PTSD situation, which is how I feel like they're trying to cast it, that he's like, he's a Marine, anything could happen. Like, and SVU did this too with Stabler, like, well, I'm a Marine. And
yeah, so you're not serving.
You don't get
right
to
now.
Menace people, shithead. Anyway, whatever. Poor Taylor is the thing I never thought I would say, but here we are.
I know. Again, through the looking glass. So Peter is leaving the hospital when Nick steps into the elevator with him and follows him to his car. And Peter is unconcerned because apparently Taylor tried everything to deal with Nick and his death threats other than warning Peter and or trying to get the money from Peter. And when Peter is not paying attention, Nick puts on a set of brass knuckles and clocks him hard in the face. And they are seriously right out in front of the hospital in the early evening. Like, dozens of people would be around as Nick kicks the shit out of Peter. Yeah. But of course, this is when Taylor shows up and tries to intervene. Like, she's not going to be much use. She hasn't been going to the gym. But then Kyle also shows up. and gets between Nick and Peter, and they end up fighting as Taylor yells that the cops are on their way, and Kyle is totally unharmed by Nick's brass knuckle punches as he gets in Nick's face and says Nick needs to leave town and never come back. Ugh. Bad scene. Real bad. Badly done.
Yeah. I mean, at least they used it. Like, Taylor gets flung across the hood of a car, and at least they used a slightly appropriate stunt person and not Bruce with a squirrel pelt on his head. Still. This could have been avoided if anyone talked to each other on the phone except when someone else was in the room.
Right. God. So then Kyle is seeing Nick off at the bus station the next day and giving him a little cash, and they have this exchange, clip 9.
Sorry about everything. I was just looking out for you, you know?
Yeah, well.
Semper Fi.
Get it.
Okay, guess I better get going. Look, if I'm ever in L.A. again,
No, Nick, forget it. You know, I want you to get on this bus, and I want you to live your life far away from here. It turned out the way it turned out, but it's over, so. Adios.
And
are you at least going to give him his promise ring back, Kyle? God.
This seems so much like Anne, and we never saw him again, that I looked it up, and he's in 6 more episodes. Like, I truly have no idea where else they could go with this character, but I guess we'll all find out. I don't know.
Also, has this actor done anything else?
Well, he died. So.
Oh, right.
he was in Co-Ed Call Girl.
I forgot about that. Oh, yes.
He died.
And then he died. He's been so on here so long, it seems like, already, that I completely forgot that we had this conversation, because season 5 started in the 70s.
Yeah.
The 1870s.
He's in that Michael Mann movie that I was telling you about, that LA Takedown, that was like a trial run at heat.
Oh,
from right. 1989. Which is funny, because when you look at him, he's like, he does kind of look like a young William Peterson.
Yeah, I could see that.
Anyway, who previously worked with Michael Mann in Manhunter? Is that the name of the first Hannibal Lecter movie?
Yes, I believe so.
Anyway, back at the complex, Sydney sees Kyle with his boxes, and he tells her that Taylor is moving out due to irreconcilable differences. Clip 10.
Wow, I'm sorry. I mean, I never liked her, but...
No, Sid, I don't need to hear from one more person what a lying tramp my wife has been.
Oh, hey, not for me. I mean, I know that you must feel bad, whatever this is about, so, I hope it works out for you.
Excuse me. Can I talk to my husband, please?
Well, better ask him.
Awkward. But I do enjoy how Sydney is, like, giddy at the prospect all of her dreams have come true.
Openly laughing.
Yes.
Love it.
So, inside, Taylor probably wishes she hadn't tried to talk to Kyle. Clip 11.
You know, now would be a good time for you to move in with Peter.
Kyle, I don't want to lose you.
Yeah, well, it's a little late for that, isn't it?
I can't excuse what I've done. I don't even understand it.
Really?
I had this pressure inside of me. It was pushing me to this secret world. It's not real. Mm. This is my real life with
really?
You, Kyle. Yes.
Really?
I never meant to hurt you, Kyle. Please, I don't want us to end. Please, baby.
You get your sorry ass out of here. Goodbye, Taylor. And good night.
Go to hell!
Okay, it's a real you can't fire me, I quit moment. Like, Kyle already won that exchange, Taylor. He told you to go to hell without saying so in so many words. I mean, not to be on his side in this, because as I previously said, this is ugly.
Yeah.
But you didn't get yours back with that go to hell. It was kind of pathetic,
no.
Actually.
Yeah, the distant. Oof, yeah.
So Taylor
is
carrying. No, it's not good. Taylor is carrying her suitcase out of the courtyard when she passes Amanda, who loudly hopes Taylor is moving to another country. Taylor claims that Peter is waiting for her at his condo, which we have no reason to think is true. Amanda is happy that Taylor got what she wanted, even if she had to break up two marriages to get it. And in her apartment, Amanda calls lawyer Jamie Chun to start the old divorce ball rolling. And that's where we leave it for now.
Ugh. Guys.
Let's name our episode MVP. Andrew Hsu was like unusually good. I mean,
I know.
He was still
and his
only,
hair is fixed.
His hair is fixed.
This is almost never even possible.
Yeah.
So, Billy.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yep. Least valuable player. Nick.
Everyone else.
Truly everyone else. Except Mrs. Yeah. Fielding. She's trying to do the right thing.
Yes, she is.
In a very difficult time.
I mean,
time.
Matt got to pull some faces. I mean, I guess Josh, the pimp, but mostly Kyle?
Mm-hmm.
You were a dumbass, and then you are manhandling people, and then you should have kissed Nick goodbye at the bus station, and you didn't. Like,
you
everything
sure
is wrong in your life. Next time on Again With This, Matt reluctantly stars in Erica 2, Electric Brattaloo. Sid is distracted from heartbreak by a dumb slip and fall plot. Megan gets evicted and Taylor's creepy spot gets blown up again. Our visual aids might blow up your retinae, but we can't stop, won't stop. You can find those for this and every other episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AWT90210. You can get a lipful of McBride Scotch and drunk dial us at 210-920-4699. And you can and should join our Patreon page. There is a ton of extra 90210 and Melrose content there, including our monthly recaps of the 90210 OMG podcast, which you can hear if you're a big spender at the $5 level and up. All of that at patreon.com/againwiththis. I am Elusive Second Take Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Disgruntled Perfume Marketing Client Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is Overused Scorpion Frog Parable David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Ooh. What?